it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Raise a spoon to Grandma, who always took all the hungry cousins to McDonald's for McNuggets and the play slide. Have something sweet in her honor. Come to McDonald's and treat yourself to the Grandma McFlurry today. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
Welcome to the Wisden Cricket Ashes Daily Podcast on what feels like a pivotal day two of the final test match. I'm Katty Whitney and I'm joined by Mel Farrell at the Kia Oval about half an hour after play's finished. Mel, what do you think of Australia with the bat today?
It was a bizarre day, wasn't it? It was a really weird day. They came out at first session. I just kept looking at the scoreboard and just saying, oh, it's not going anywhere. And the contrast from England was amazing. It was incredible that they got to a position so similar to England at the end of the day, going at it completely a different way. Yeah, and it was interesting asking Steve Smith about that afterwards, about the tactical thinking behind that. You know, were they trying to get Wood, Mark Wood, into his third or fourth spells and really tire them out? And he actually said, no, there were no tactics. There was no plan. People were just batting how they were batting, which I thought was quite fascinating, because that sort of made sense that they might do that, that they might try and sort of really grind Australia down. I know that's what a lot of people felt, and I did too, that they that England should have done when Nathan Lyon was injured at Lord's for that period of time. And you just came into the day feeling like Australia were in a really good position, and you got to lunch and you felt like, do we just have a session almost? So it was really, really strange. I thought, well, if they end up going on batting big, making a huge score, this is all going to make absolute sense, especially if England are knackered. Moeen already has an injury. But Australia aren't a side generally that has big collapses. It wasn't like a massive calamitous collapse today, but they did lose 5 for 70. After lunch, which is enough. And all of a sudden it was, I was thinking back to all the stuff that the Baz ballers have been saying about, well, you can go along and sort of play relatively risk-free cricket and then you get a good ball and the scoreboard hasn't moved. And it was almost like we saw the antithesis of that today. And they were very fortunate in the end that they had the Smith-Cummins partnership and that Todd Murphy came in and you did really, really well, particularly against Mark Wood, maybe battered as well to Mark Wood as anybody has all series. So excuse me for my voice, by the way. This is the eighth test in 8 weeks and it's showing. But yeah, so it was just a weird day. And now, and yet again, I get to the end of it and I've just got no idea what's really going on. And I felt that way yesterday after England had battered. I wasn't sure if that was a good score or not. So it continues to be difficult to judge.
Absolutely. I think this morning was the first time in this series that it's actually felt pretty turgid.
Like, oh, yeah.
I think it was something like 21 runs in the first 14 overs of play or something. And that's not to say they didn't do a good job, because don't forget, Australia don't have to win this test match. So it's not on them to move the game forward in a way that moves it towards an Australia win. But yeah, this morning was actually quite hard to watch, I found.
England did bowl well. So yeah, let's give England a lot of credit. The ball was doing... ball was doing quite a bit, and it obviously wasn't, but there was also a part of you that wanted them to be a little bit more proactive. It didn't feel like it was particularly proactive. And seeing Marnus soak up that many balls, Steve Smith said they were absorbing pressure. So that's a real Baz ball phrase as well, isn't it? Absorb pressure. He also used the term pull the trigger, which is another Baz Ball reference. So look, it's seeping into their conscience, whether they like it or not.
Yeah, I mean, you're right to point out England did bowl well. I thought Jimmy Anderson actually bowled pretty well this morning. I think he probably bowled his best spell of the series this morning. Didn't pick up any wickets till he got Marsh after lunch to a chop on. He's just said to BBC TMS, I think, that he's not going to retire anytime soon. He's averaging more than 74 in the series so far. Mel, what do you think of the point Anderson's at right now?
It has been strange. It's been one of the series where you feel he hasn't made as much impact if you're looking at it in terms of wickets. I'm not sure that that's the only way that you judge Jimmy Anderson as well. For me, the fascinating thing about Jimmy Anderson is that the age he's at, the success he's had in England in particular, but also overseas in doing what he does so brilliantly and using the skills he has. But in the past 16 months, he has adapted and he's started doing things that he never has done before, whether it's, you know, not taking the new ball, whether it's bowling periods of short pitch bowling. So he's basically embraced everything that they're doing and he's happy to do jobs that might not be his natural way of taking wickets as well. So he's kind of gone away from it, but he's doing it because of the team, because he wants to do what the team wants and he wants to do whatever Ben Stokes wants him to do. And within that, he's developed in other ways and he's been brilliant in other series in the past sort of 16 months. He's also having as much fun as he's ever had, and he's said that. So if he can continue, if he's just had a sort of not great series, if he continues to have an impact in other series, then, you know, fair enough if his body can keep going. I guess it's hard to judge. We probably wouldn't be saying this is if he was 5 years younger, right?
So yeah.
that's the main thing in there. If he was having slightly an off series. But I guess it's not just wickets that you judge Jimmy on. It's a whole range of other things as well. And he's amazing that he's still trying new things.
Yeah, I mean, you're right in saying that if he was 5 years younger, it might not matter as much. When you turn 40, you're not allowed a bad series, right? And I also think, for what it's worth, that we won't know it's Jimmy Anderson's last Test match until it's actually happened. I don't think he's one for that Alistair Cook-style massive send-off. But I also kind of think that now might be the best time on all sides. I think for years, England fans have worried about what it's going to be like when Anderson retires and who's going to get them all those wickets with the new ball and rescue that batting lineup. And there are people now who are performing, with Robinson in this series and the emergence of Josh Tung and all of those people and Mark Wood and Chris Wokes, who do have those skill set, and the batting lineup is firing a lot more than it was over the last 5 years. Maybe this would be the easiest transition for Jimmy to make. But, you know, he'll continue to play Test cricket until he wants to stop playing Test cricket, really.
He'll be bowling with a Zimmer frame, basically.
We also witnessed some controversy today. What was nearly a brilliant piece of fielding by George Elam, who's a substitute fielder on for Moeen Ali. He's on Surrey's staff here. He sprinted in, picked up the ball, Gary Pratt-esque, throw at the stumps. And on initial look on the third umpire, it looked like Steve Smith was short of his ground. But the third umpire ruled that the wicket hadn't been fully broken by the time that Smith had regained his ground. However, there was some analysis on Sky that then pointed to the fact that the wicket might have been fully broken before Smith had made his ground, and therefore he would have been out. However, there was also some ambiguity over whether Johnny Bairstow had broken the wicket before the ball had even reached his hand. It's another one of those cricket is just ridiculous moments. What's your take on it?
Yeah, cricket's a stupid sport.
Yes.
We talked about all of these and that was basically the only thing that we could come to. Imagine trying to explain that to someone who was new to the game and hadn't watched cricket before. When you're down to having to talk about spigots and grooves, You're really in a lot of trouble. Stuart Broad's just said he doesn't even really know what the rule is. I also think it's one of those ones that you're probably going to look at it depending on which team you support. It's one of those ones where whichever way the decision had gone, someone would have a problem with it. One side would have an issue with it. I don't think the players actually had an issue with it at all, because, you know, if it, you're given out, you're given out. And it was so, just even listening to your explanation of it, when it's so convoluted, it's really hard. But I do think that of all the little gimmicks that have been introduced to cricket over the years, for various reasons, the one that has made the most cricket sense, and I think has been the best, is the zing bails.
Yeah.
Because in run-out situations, in stumping situations, they often remove some ambiguity. Whether they would have or not in this case, we don't know. Again, in the press conference, Stuart Broad told him that the umpire said to him, if there had been zing bails, that probably would have been out. I'm actually not sure what that means. That's really strange one to me. But what it might have done is actually made things a little bit clearer to when the stumps were broken, or when maybe we need partial zing bails. That's what we need. We need half a light for partial and half a light for full, because both grooves have to be out apparently for the bail to be judged removed.
Maybe we need Hawkeye on the zing bails. Maybe that's a new one that we could introduce.
Well, yeah, and it comes carried in by Spider-Cam. I just don't know. It's a really strange one. But the unfortunate thing for England was what happened after that,
yes,
that point in time, because it was after then, and I don't, that was so celebrating really hard. And Steve Smith looked like he was gone for all money and he was about to walk off anyway. And even after the replays, the England players were really celebrating as well. So whether or not there was a bit of deflation after that, but it just, you know, that after that, at that point, it could have really gone a different way for Australia, and England could have a healthy lead. But, you know, sliding doors, coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Yeah, well, when Steve Smith did eventually get out, playing a pretty ridiculous shot, to be honest with you, Todd Murphy came in and played Mark Wood better than any other Australia batter has probably played Mark Wood for the entirety of the time he's been playing in the series. And that meant Australia now have a slight lead going into day three. Moeen Ali, we haven't seen him at all today. He hasn't taken the field. He's still got that groin injury. He's going to have to wait 120 minutes or until England are 5 wickets down before he can bat tomorrow. Mel, which one's going to happen first?
Oh, wow. Hang on. That 120 minutes.
Yep.
It's 2 hours. So one session, 5 wickets down. No. I reckon 120 minutes first.
That's the faithful response that we would want.
I'm going in hard. I very rarely go in hard. I like to sit on the fence, but I'm going in hard on that. No, yeah.
What are your predictions for the rest of tomorrow? What do you think is going to happen?
I just don't know. Like we have with all of this, it's going to be pretty interesting to see how the pitch plays, because you'd think day three here at the Oval is generally the best day for batting. So things brighten up a little bit as well.
Might be a little bit of rain around.
Oh, great. England are going to go for it, aren't they? It's going to be more of the same. England are going to go for it. And maybe this will be one of the most baseball-y kind of innings that we see all series. It could probably go one of two ways. This is like 120 minutes or 5 wickets down. That probably sums up tomorrow. It's either England go for it and put on a really, really, really good score, or this is where it all comes horribly unstuck and they have a bit of a collapse, and Australia, you know, we might be heading for a four-day test. Heading for a four-day test?
Yeah. So basically the speculation is at the start of every day's play for this series, England might go really well or they might go really badly.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's my only prediction. It's the only way I can know, because after every day, I still go, yeah, not really sure here. There's every chance that we'll be here at the end of the day tomorrow. Not here, because I'm not doing the pod tomorrow. But we will be here at the end of tomorrow going, who's on top?
Just like every day in the series. Well, we'll find out tomorrow. Thanks, Mel. We're in for another thrilling day of Test cricket at the Kia Oval tomorrow. You can tune into the pod to hear us dissect all the crucial events from another pivotal day.
Sports Social Podcast Network.